Many hands make light work. I'm Joseph. This is Input English. I started out with an old saying, an expression that has been used in the English language since the mid-1300s. It came to North America from England. The first records of it date back to the mid-1300s, but it became very popular when Heywood popularized it in the mid-1500s. This is an expression my father taught me in a very specific context. He taught the whole family this expression. How did this come to pass? At the dinner table. Dinner time and meal times around the world are very interesting. These times in family life demonstrate a lot of cultural beliefs, traditions, and they figure prominently in our lives. We spend a lot of time at the dinner table. What I'd like to do today is offer you some vignettes, some little stories that occurred in my life related to the dinner table. Of course, our purpose here is to create comprehensible input. Just like you, I am a language learner, and when I want to acquire more language, I need more input. And input should be interesting. It should be something I understand in general. And the input is a vehicle for me to better understand my target languages. The Input English channel has more than 500 videos available to you as a reservoir of input that you can use 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Anytime you want input, you can go to the video library on this channel and find something that you might find interesting. It's important that our input be interesting. If it's boring, it's difficult to maintain our concentration on the story or the discussion, and then we don't benefit too much from that kind of input. I create a lot of different types of input, so hopefully you'll find something that piques your interest, something that you want to spend your valuable time watching. On the Input English channel, you don't get shortcuts, you don't get false claims. There are no quick and slick ways to hack the English language. It's a gradual process of acquisition, and it works extremely well, but it requires a little bit of patience and a lot of time. So let's set the stage for you. Let's go back to when I was a child growing up on the East Coast of the United States. My dad was working as a surgeon, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. Stay-at-home mom is an expression we use for a mother who does not work outside the house, a mother whose duties are primarily to maintain the household and care for the children. You could call my mother a stay-at-home mom, but paradoxically, she didn't stay at home very much. She didn't have a job, but she was always doing things. She always had errands. She always had things to do. My parents grew up during the period of time we refer to as the Great Depression. Starting in 1929, the United States and the world went through a horrific economic catastrophe. We called this period of time the Great Depression, and it lasted basically until the late 1930s. People who grew up or lived during the Great Depression frequently had some degree of hardship. Those experiences that they had during the Depression sometimes reverberated through the generations afterward. That was very much the case in our family. My parents considered the dinner hour, that is the evening meal, as very special. I can quote my father as referring to the dinner hour as sacred. Now, when I say sacred, it sounds like I'm talking about something specifically religious. But sometimes in American English, when you refer to something as sacred, you are simply referring to it as very special, very valuable, something you want to really keep. So in this non-religious sense, my dad would refer to the dinner hour as sacred. Another word you could use would be sacrosanct. Sacrosanct came into English directly from Latin. Its original meaning was referring to a religious theme, but again, it had a non-religious usage in English, something that's very special, something that needs to be preserved, something that needs to be honored. So my dad might easily have referred to the dinner hour as sacrosanct. Typically, my mother would fix dinner. The main course of the dinner usually included meat, vegetables, and a starch. Desserts were not common. We got desserts when we were growing up on special occasions, birthdays, holidays, but not during the week, not during regular meals. I got a little insight about my mom's thought process on dinner when I went off to college. When I first got to college, I got my meals at the cafeteria. The college provided a meal plan, and we would pay for our meals for the quarter. One weekend, I came home from school and was talking to my mother about the experiences I've had, and I simply pointed out that I had a really good dinner the other day. She politely asked, "Oh, really? What was it?" And I said, "It was a pork roast." To my recollection, I had never had a pork roast, and I was telling her how wonderful this dish was. I was very surprised at her response. She was not pleased with my description of this wonderful meal in terms of a pork roast. It turns out that she associated pork roasts with poverty. During the Depression, money was tight, and so they apparently ate a lot of pork roasts to save money. So because of her experiences growing up during the Depression, she avoided serving pork. We never had it growing up. She always went for the beef. Beef and chicken were the meat dishes that she served. Occasionally we would have some fish, but mostly it was beef. Over the years I talked to her about this topic. This was baggage from her youth growing up during the Depression. Now over time things change and I no longer eat pork roast or beef or any kind of meat because more than 15 years ago I just got rid of meat. I apply that rule only to myself. I don't require other people to eat with a vegetarian or plant-based eating plan, but I choose that myself. So I mentioned pork roast with great reverence, but that was Joseph in the past, not at the present. Sometimes dinners are a bit of a ritual. They are made special by the family. I was told a story by my mother of something that happened when she and my dad were first married. She fixed dinner in their home, and they invited another couple to come over. The other couple was a little older and a little more experienced. My mom put a lot of effort into fixing this meal, and she roasted a chicken. She was very proud of what she had created. She summoned everyone to the table, and they sat down. And then she brought the dishes out from the kitchen. the kitchen being the next room behind a door. She came out of the kitchen holding the platter, upon which was this roasted chicken that she had carefully prepared. Unfortunately, after she had come through the kitchen door and was preparing to place this platter on the table, she slipped and the chicken fell to the floor. The chicken was very thoroughly cooked, so when it hit the floor, it basically fell apart. All the pieces separated, and it was no longer this presentable roasted chicken. It was a pile of chicken pieces. She told me that she was horrified with what had just happened, and she didn't know what to do. However, the lady, the guest who was visiting for this meal, stood quickly and said, "Oh, that's no problem. Let me help you." The two of them scraped up the chicken onto the platter so that they could remove it to the kitchen. My mother was trying to figure out what she was going to do. What is she going to feed her guests? The chicken just hit the floor. It was right about then that her guest, the lady who was a little older and more experienced, said, "You know, now I know why you fixed that second chicken. That was brilliant. Until right now, I didn't understand, but you wanted to be sure to have food in case something happened. That was brilliant. Let me help you serve that." Well, my mom knew there was no other chicken. She figured that this was a ruse created by her guest so that she could save face. She went along with it. They took the chicken that had fallen apart out to the kitchen. They rinsed off the platter and carefully put the chicken pieces on the platter, assembling this new entree in a very presentable way. That scenario, that event of dropping the chicken and then serving it to guests, happened long before I was born. I was just told the story. When I was told that story, this event was not described in terms of the 10-second rule. What's that? The 10-second rule is something you will hear in American English today. It's a reassuring saying that if something falls to the floor, if you pick it up within seconds, you can still eat it. It's a casual expression. It's not always taken literally. Some people do not choose to eat food that has spent time on the floor, but you will hear about the 10-second rule that reassures you that it's probably okay to eat food that briefly was on the floor. Now, interestingly enough, in my household, we didn't observe the 10-second rule. In my house, if food hit the floor, we threw it out. But there was a very good reason for that. In my work, I was in laboratories, hospitals, I was in places that had a lot of germs that would cause disease in humans. In the United States, it is common for people to wear their shoes in the house. When I grew up, we were not allowed to walk around without shoes. We got up in the morning, we put our shoes on, and we kept them on unless we were in the bathtub, in bed, or down at the lake swimming. We wore our shoes indoors all the time. But in this house, we take our shoes off when we come in the front door. I never wear street shoes, that is, the shoes that I wear out of doors, in the house. I wear slippers. This is because I don't want to bring a lot of germs into the house from the places that I go and work. One time, my sister-in-law was visiting, and I think we were eating some sort of fruit, perhaps grapes, and she dropped something She picked it up and was about to eat it, and I stopped her and said, "No, not in this house." And I actually encouraged her to throw that food away. She quoted the 10-second rule to me, and I said, "No, because of where I go at work, laboratories and hospitals, you don't want to take a chance." However, other families might readily accept the 10-second rule. With a piece of fruit, for instance, one could reasonably rinse it off in the sink and consider it fine. Now, I don't make any rules about how people deal with this issue. I'm just talking about an expression that is commonly used in American English called the 10-second rule, and I let you in on the secret that it doesn't exist in my household. It's also relatively uncommon for Americans to take their shoes off at the front door and walk around in the house without shoes. I suspect that that practice is getting more common. That practice is very prominent in a lot of cultures around the world, and for me, it only makes sense. At the dinner table, sometimes dramas play out. We spend a lot of time at dinner tables talking to family and dealing with the issues that come up in the family. One of my sisters could have been described as a picky eater. She didn't like some of the food that she was given. I, on the other hand, would eat anything on the plate. I seemed to always be hungry and always receptive to what was served. But that said, my sister could have been described as a picky eater. I can recall to this day an incident that occurred. There was part of her meal she didn't want to eat. She didn't like it. Eventually, the family members dispersed from the table, and she was sitting there by herself with instructions to eat that piece of food that was before her. It was her dinner. When no one was looking, she proceeded to the kitchen with her plate and stuffed that piece of unwanted food deep into the garbage can so it wouldn't be seen. Unfortunately, I was privy to what she was doing. I saw this happen. So after she had departed, I reached down into the garbage can and put that piece of unwanted food right on top so that it could be seen by my parents. You could say I did that as a prank, or to my mind, it was because I saw an injustice. She had been told to eat that food. She didn't want to eat it, and so she threw it away and hid it. Now, looking back decades to that point in time, I'm not proud of what I did. It's just what I did. My parents saw this piece of food that had been discarded. They put two and two together. They figured out that she had simply thrown it away. And she was spoken to about her behavior. None of us were scarred for life by that episode. It was just an example of a little drama that played out at the dinner table. When we were growing up, television figured prominently in American life. The kids watched a lot of television after school, and there was a tendency for the children to be very interested in what was on television when dinner was served. However, my parents had a rule. When it was dinner time, the television was turned off. We never watched television during dinner. I started this episode with a quote, "Many hands make light work." But how does that relate to the dinner table? At the end of each meal, it's time to clear the table and wash the dishes. But our family had six people, so there were a lot of dishes. It was a big job. When we were very small children, my mom simply washed the dishes after every meal. When the children grew up enough to participate, then we were called upon to clear the table and perhaps participate in washing the dishes. My dad had a favorite saying, Many hands make light work. We can do this. Let's all clear the table. We can do this. We can have the dishes all done in 5 minutes. Now, my dad's enthusiasm for this approach was not shared by my mom. She viewed this process of the entire family clearing the table and doing the dishes as pure chaos, and she didn't want anything to do with it. She would much prefer to do the dishes herself or to assign it to one or two of the children who were old enough to do the work. My mom also did not approve of stacking plates that had food on them. At the end of a meal, some families take the used plates that have food residue on them and stack them up, and then take the stack of plates to the kitchen and rinse them off, put them in the dishwasher, or wash them with soap and water. They do the dishes. They wash the dishes. That's an expression, actually, I should showcase. If you do the dishes, you are washing the dishes. It's a common expression in American English, do the dishes. Growing up, I didn't like to do the dishes, but I did it from time to time. But back to the topic of stacking plates, my mom did not allow us to stack plates. So if we were gathering the dishes to wash them in the kitchen, she would not tolerate stacking plates because it bothered her. If you stack plates, that puts food residue on the other side of the plate. And it's more work for her, or more work for the person doing the dishes. So it was something that really, really, really bothered her. If you wanted to get her goat, stack dishes right in front of her. It would drive her crazy. If you get someone's goat, you are irritating them. Specifically, getting someone's goat, you are irritating them on purpose. So if you wanted to get my mom's goat, all you had to do is stack the plates after a meal, and she would be quite irritated. Some experiences at the dinner table are shared experiences when guests or family members come and enjoy a special meal. If an out-of-town guest comes and shares a meal, it's a special occasion. Sometimes the meal is prepared with great reverence to make it just right for this special occasion. I can remember once when I was fairly young, one of my dad's army buddies from World War II came with his wife to visit. They lived more than 1,000 miles away, and so these visits were not common, but occurred occasionally throughout my childhood and teenage years. My dad was a photographer during World War II, and his army buddy was the supply sergeant. The supply sergeant knew everybody. He dealt with everybody. And this fellow was very charming, very warm, and very friendly. It made total sense that he and my dad would be good friends. So he and his wife came down to our house and visited. My mom fixed a special meal, and my dad decided to prank the sergeant's wife. The two of them cooked up this little plan. My dad had noticed that the sergeant's wife was given to criticize him in social situations. So they cooked up this plan that during the meal, the former sergeant would manage to get some sauce or mayonnaise or something on his lip. That way his wife would see it. He expected the instruction from his wife, "Wipe your mouth, you have mayonnaise on your mouth." However, the way this prank unfolded was that everyone else at the table, except his wife, was in on the trick. They were in on the joke. Everyone at the table was waiting for that moment that the former sergeant would have mayonnaise on his lip. That was our cue that everyone at the table was also to apply a small amount of mayonnaise to our own lip. Everyone did exactly as they were instructed. The only one at the table that didn't know about this was the former sergeant's wife. When it happened, she was talking to him, noticed the mayonnaise on his lip, and as predicted, she issued her instruction that he should wipe his mouth and get rid of that mayonnaise on his lip. As soon as she said those words, my dad said something to her that caused her to look in his direction, and he had mayonnaise on his lip as well. And then she looked at everyone else at the table, and everyone else at the table had a small portion of mayonnaise on their lip. We got her goat. Of course, this was very lighthearted, and she didn't get angry. She laughed. She realized that she had been pranked. That's an expression. If a prank or a joke is played upon someone, they have been pranked. We have to be careful with pranks because feelings can get hurt. People can be offended. But in this case, the response was very lighthearted, very positive. She enjoyed the joke. Looking back at the dinner table experiences that we had when I was growing up, the other thing I can recall is that we had assigned seats. The dinner table had chairs around the table, and at each meal, we always sat at our place. This apparently came from my parents' experience when they grew up. They grew up with assigned seats. During my childhood, one would never sit at the wrong seat at the dinner table. That would be terrible. No one would tolerate that. This idea of assigned seats at the dinner table is not something I support. We don't have assigned seats. When we sit down to the table, we sit any place we want. The concept of assigned seating at the dinner table was something my parents did, but I don't support that. It's funny. Sometimes we continue traditions from our childhood or from our youth. Other things we discard. One of the things that I have discarded from my childhood is the idea of assigned seating at the dinner table. So these were just a few anecdotes, some little scenarios that played out. These are memories of my childhood and youth that centered around the dinner table. I talked about all of these little events for the purpose of comprehensible input. I hope you found them interesting, and I'm confident that this episode had a lot of interesting expressions and vocabulary that you will make good use of in the future. And of course, all of these expressions were presented in context. I invite comments below, and if you like videos like this, be sure to click on this one next. See you soon.